Hello, everyone. This is the joint SIO-OOR Ontolog panel discussion entitled Getting the SIO Project Going. It's Thursday, March 25th, year 2010. Our convener for the SIO project, Dr. John Sower, will not be able to join us about 30 minutes into the session. And so let me get the session started. I'm Peter Yim, co-convener of Ontolog Forum, and I'm pleased to be hosting this session. Let's bring up the slides. I'm on slide number one now. The title of my talk is SIO in Perspective. I'm trying to set the context on this SIO project in general, at least as I see it. So going on to slide two, what I have been noticing is that the ontology community has been faced with this challenge that there was never any doubt as to the efficacy of ontologies if done properly. But then a lot of people are saying that they are doing it properly already. And these people come from different approaches and philosophical underpinnings. And up until recently, I would say quite recently, it was generally believed that the philosophical differences will render disparate upper ontologies incompatible with one another. And on that note, debates among the authors of these work ended up as a major distraction to bringing these otherwise very useful work into the mainstream. And then the communities just get segmented into followings of different approaches. Going on to slide number three, the discourse on how ontologies could help or could be formalized have been going on since the Aristotelian times, and more significantly, in Charles Sanders Peirce's work, late Wittgenstein's work, and so on. I mean, I'm sure a lot of those in the community can explain their significance really well. But fast forwarding to today, after Tom Gruber defined, or at least used the term ontology as we are using it now for information sciences, back in the 1992-93 time frame, lots of debates and discussions have been going on. And in the light of trying to get different approaches and different ontologies to work with one another, we could date this back to as early as, let's say, 1998, when the first FOIS conference was called together by Nicola Guarino at Trento, followed, I think, the following week with the meeting of the top ontologists at that time at the Heidelberg Castle, where there was a serious effort to see if people could get all the different approaches, the ontologies built with the different approaches to interoperate. That didn't come out successful, at least in a significant way. Then came year 2000 when Jim Schoening put together the IEEE SUO effort, this standard upper ontology effort, calling for submissions of candidates in the approach towards getting everything into one standard upper ontology. That conversation is still going on. The IEEE list got less used, but then starting from around 2002 and up until now, a lot of the same players have been active doing the discussion on Ontolog Forum. In fact, in 2006, there was a joint Ontolog and NIST conference called the Upper Ontology Summit that pulled together the stewards or the custodians of all the open upper ontologies into one room and started to discuss exactly this issue. A joint communique was published and released as a result of that, with everyone agreeing that they would work towards getting this interoperability, but then no concrete work followed. In 2008, under the auspices of Ontology Summit 2008, as well as the Open Ontology Repository initiative that started slightly before that summit, there is an effort to put together the infrastructure to host ontologies, of which service provided to the hosted ontologies were discussed, and obviously interoperability, mapping, and so on are key services that were discussed. Although it didn't quite address interoperability as a central issue. In 2009, February, the International Association for Ontologies and its Applications was established in Trento with Nicola Guarino as the first president, and the formal ontologies community now has an international association that sort of put the community together. And then came the recent serious discussions on Ontolog Forum that John Sower has been alluded to and had presented in his March 16th post Summit 2010 presentation, and the SIO project, now called the Sharing and Integrating Ontologies project, is now established. Going to slide number 4, on the left, we've got the players who have content or ontologies, particularly upper ontologies, or approaches to offer. And on the right-hand side, we've got the registries, repositories at play. So we have mostly from the Upper Ontology Summit, John Bateman, Eldo Ganjemi, Michael Gruninger, Nicola Guarino, Barry Smith, Matthew West, Adam Peace, Doug Leonard, and so on. And in terms of approaches, we've got Pat Cassidy's Cosmo, CDV, FO, and now he calls PIFO, and John Sower's approach of the lattice of theories all at play. So, and the efforts in BioPortal, Colore, Orate, all culminate in what we generally describe as the Open Ontology Repository effort will now support the implementation of sharing and integrating ontologies. And wearing my Ontolog co-convener hat, I am happy that Ontolog will continue to support and host any dialogue and work within the Ontolog community for SIO. Moving on to the next slide and my last slide. So I think the action is now. I mean, the years and decades or maybe millennia of debate can now sort of move a next step into actual implementation under this acronym, the SIO project. And we should all recognize this is not a low-hanging fruit approach. I mean, this is really hard work. And we really have to tackle this as a community, because if we leave it to single persons, I mean, they think they've already done the best work, and we know the whole world don't interoperate that way. Maybe we are taking an approach like Wikipedia, whereby it takes an entire community or the entire world to contribute to get some real serious results. So don't look around as to who is going to do what, but ask yourself, how do you see it being rolled out? What will you be bringing to the table in the short term, in the medium term, and so on? And we will bring in other colleagues who will give us their perspectives and tell us how they see this rolling out. So I'm happy to call upon Dr. Matthew West, who's going to give us his perspective as to why should we care about the SIO project. Matthew, go ahead.
Hi, yes, and that's the title of just a few slides that I'm going to present. Further Integrated Oncology, Why Should We Care? Moving on to the next slide, my current assessment of the title of this slide. The real issue is that oncology development is really at the crossroads. Everyone rolls their own, and there's very little reuse versus intervention. And there are no widely used standard oncologies. Just to try to make that really clear, it's like nuts and bolts before the ritual. We take nuts and bolts for granted. You could take any nut of a certain size and it will fit any nut of a certain size. When the ritual works out how to standardize them, actually each nut and bolt is made as a nut square. And the nuts in one bolt would not fit the bolts in another nut and bolt set. And that's the kind of phase we're at with oncology at the moment. And then I say there are no widely used standard oncologies, I mean that there are no oncologies, there are not many standard oncologies at all, and those that there are not widely used. And those things that there are widely used, you might think of things like tenders and oncology, but they're not really useful, they're only useful really for strange information, not really useful for integrated information, which is certainly my personal main interest in oncology. There's little understanding of how different oncologies perform in relate to each other, how to between different oncologies when they differ and why they differ, and how to construct complexity components. Moving on to the next slide, some difficult success factors, we need to be able to understand how different oncologies based on different commitments do relate to each other. We know that a number of different foundations that you can choose for an oncology, and we have a number of example oncologies that use those different commitments. But what we don't know is each other, and no work of any great significance has been done in that area. We need to be able to decompose and reconstruct theories so that we can see the components of oncologies used, and reuse an extension to be delivered from integrated activity rather than kind of copy and change, which is at the moment. So that's the best reuse that we see at the moment. Is someone says, oh, that looks like a good book of oncology, and they'll just copy it and adapt it and change it, and then it's not actually the same as the first before. It becomes something different by being incorporated somewhere else. So finally then, why the SIO initiative? what is the story that John Ferris has talked about, our potential to address many of the things that I have outlined above. It has this way of being able to decompose a theory into its form so that you can look at stronger and weaker versions of the same thing. And I've also been very impressed by what I've heard and seen of Pelloro. It seems to be at least a step down the path of taking this kind of approach. And something very much more than a library, which is really just a collection of whatever there is that's out there. And I've not seen an alternative to taking the blessing these issues. So I do think it's quite an exciting time, in particular, I think that there is not much work to be worth doing until the couple of issues that I've been talking about here are resolved, because it's only through resolving those issues that we will actually get a more solid project rather than shouting issues that are about what it's supposed to do something. Okay, that's it.
Well, thank you very much, Matthew. All right, let's invite Dr. Patrick Cassidy to tell us how all these different pieces and acronyms fit together. Pat, go ahead.
Okay, what I want to do is to try to explain how the COSMO ontology I'm working on and the PIFO, the Primitive Inventory Foundation ontology, toward which the COSMO is directed, that these kinds of ontologies will fit in with the SIO effort. I'll start off at slide one and just indicate that this SIO, this set of shared inventory ontologies, will actually only be one part of the open ontology repository, that they will be ontologies in the open ontology repository that are not linked in any way to others. What we're concerned about here at the SIO effort is a set of ontologies that are linked by more than just a few trivial mappings to each other in such a way that they can actually, these links will enable them to work together to some extent or another. A little terminology, the Colore project will be a set of ontology modules, and it's being built by Mike Gruninger and had Ali Hashemi as part of the project, and he has more graduate students coming in. That kind of work that Mike's doing there will be very important in trying to actually specify specifically what kinds of relationships there are and can be between elements in ontologies. My particular interest is what I call a Primitive Inventory Foundation ontology. It's a foundation ontology that contains the complete set of semantic primitives that have been identified, and I believe that this would be very important for us as a basis for general accurate semantic interoperability. A foundation ontology in general, with any ontology, has the most basic concepts. And you can have, for example, the base KB of psych or the sumo ontology, and these could serve as a foundation ontology. I'm concerned with a foundation ontology that has a complete inventory of primitives. It's not just a list of primitives, it's an ontology that contains primitives along with other things. My own specific work is on the COSMO. Means common semantic model, and the COSMO is being developed to include all of the primitives that have been identified in the long run. Let's go to slide two. Now, what a Primitive Inventory Foundation ontology will do is to enable semantic interoperability for this reason, that in order to have accurate semantic interoperability, to share information in the form that systems can receive and properly interpret and act on, they must have an agreement on a common, unambiguous vocabulary as well as the format. So they need to have a common language. The common language includes not only the grammar, which refers to the logic, but the vocabulary as well. And there must be some agreement on that. Now, it's pretty well agreed that you can't get a single ontology or a single vocabulary that everybody in the world will know because words change too fast. But the PIFO provides a tactic that will allow you to have the same effect without having to agree on everything, just agree on the PIFO. And the principle is, if the foundation ontology contains all the identified semantic primitives, it will be able to logically specify the meanings of any elements in the domain ontologies that use it as their foundation ontology. And this is necessarily so, because the definition of a primitive is something that cannot be defined in terms of other elements. Whereas the domain ontologies will have many elements which can be specified with respect to the primitives in the petrol. If there are any primitives that are required for any domain ontology, then they should be put into the PIFA. When you create the domain or domain ontology elements as combinations of the elements in the PIFO, then that automatically maps the ontologies. No further mapping is needed. That mapping enables automatic merging of ontologies and automatic translation of assertions from the format of one domain ontology to the format of another. And this is, I think, the most accurate kind of semantic interoperability that we can hope for. And next slide, slide 3. The work I'm doing, Cosmo, is an ontology, and it's being developed, as I say, as an approximation, just a simple first approximation to the PIFO. This approximation will be developed by representing all the words, 2,000 or so, in the Longman Dictionary Defining Vocabulary. These words are sufficient to define all the other words in the Longman Vocabulary. And as best I can tell, this is the best current inventory of terms which likely represent the needed primitives. Other primitives may be discovered, and the ontology will also contain concepts other than those primitives. But that's the main goal. The current state is that Cosmo is in an AL format. In order to work as PIFO, it really needs to be converted into a personal logic form, such as CL. But for now, until I finish the first version, it would be in AL. And getting close to the finishing the first stage, there are about 150 Longman words that have not yet been represented, and that's the focus of the continuing work there. The next slide, the role of the Cosmo in the SI. All the ontologies in the SI should have a high degree of density of relationships to each other, so they should be able to interoperate. But within that set of ontologies in the SIO, the Cosmo could serve as the PIFO, the foundation ontology, which could be used to specify the meanings of terms in any other ontology, the SIO. And if that's done, as I said before, then those domain ontologies specified using the PIFO would be automatically mapped. And then there are other things in the SIO which actually may be incorporated into the Cosmo, in particular some of the modules that are being worked on in the Colori project. So that's how I view the role of Cosmo in the PIFO at the present, in the SIO at the present time. And I'm finished.
Thank you, Pat. Let's invite Professor Michael Gruninger to tell us about Colori and how it all fits into this SIO scheme. Michael, please.
Thank you, Peter. So I thought that today I would give a brief update on the work that we've been doing with Colori. Thanks to the hard work of some of my other graduate students, Darren Ong, Ali Hashemi, and Carson Hamid. He's now kind of in the liquid phase. No longer vaporware, but we're still not quite solid yet. And so I want to give a little brief overview of where we and discuss some of the relationships to other work that's going on within the OOR and Ontolog communities in general. So if you go to slide 2, Colori is, just to remind people, a repository of first-order logic ontologies that are all specified using Common Logic. The name Colori is the Common Logic Ontology Repository. We intend to use this as a testbed for ontology evaluation and integration so that we can support the design of new ontologies, evaluate existing ontologies, understand the relationships, and specify mappings between them. I'd like to invite people to click on the URL at the top of slide 2. Which is the main page for Colori. Currently, right now, Colori is more of a library than a repository, and we'll be discussing some of that a little briefly in a few minutes. So on that main page there, you'll see there's an overview of the project. And then on the banner near the top, you'll see ontology. So if you click on that, it takes you to our main ontology page. We loosely divide up the ontologies into three kinds of groups. There are the foundational ontologies, which are capturing notions related to different classes of mathematical structures, and we use those as kind of the basis for proving representation theorems for other ontologies. There's a layer of generic ontologies, which is roughly corresponds to the coverage of upper ontologies. So we have modules for time ontologies, duration, process, mirror topology, geometry, and shape. And then we have, on top of that, we have a layer of domain ontologies, which are more specific to specific applications, such as computer vision, manufacturing, web services. And in the future, we'll also have a set of ontologies that are related to specific software applications for semantic mapping. So, for example, we'll have UML, activity diagrams, iLog schedule, IDEF3, and things like that. And just briefly, if you click on, under generic ontologies, if you click on time, you'll see the about 20 or so modules. These are all taken from Pat Hayes' catalog of temporal theories. And these are all axiomatized in common logic. And we're working on kind of understanding the mapping between them. So if we return to our slides, if you go to slide 3, I want to spend the next few minutes just discussing some of the relationships between the ongoing Colore project and some of the other efforts within Oncolog. First of all, with respect to BioPortal and the OOR testbed sandbox, our long-term goal is to somehow integrate the ontologies and the metadata from Colore with BioPortal and the sandbox. In a sense, a lot of the work in Colore is emphasizing the ontology metadata, the meta-theoretic relationships between different ontologies, so we can really understand their underlying the relationships there. Now, right now, one of our obstacles is that the current back end of BioPortal and the sandbox really precludes common logic. Our hope is that once that has been resolved, we can just move all of the ontologies, all the modules within Colore into the sandbox. Of course, we'd be augmenting the metadata that is already specified within BioPortal and the sandbox with the Colore metadata, but that is less of a problem than somehow getting common logic axioms into there. With respect to John Sowa's lattice of theories, as John has alluded to, we can really see Colore as an implementation of a subset of the lattice. We're not defining all possible theories, we're capturing theories that ontologies that are currently being used in practice. If you go to the different web pages for each module, we have references, citations to papers where those axioms are introduced and other papers where those axioms are used. So it's really a subset of the overall lattice. And also, and this is a subject for debate, there's probably a more extensive set of formally defined relations between modules than John's kind of discussed in other presentations. But that's something that we can kind of work out as time goes on. If we move to slide 4, some questions have arisen on the Ontolog group about the relationship between Colore and upper ontology for the SUMO. Now, efforts are now underway to incorporate modules of SUMO into Colore. Cameron Ross, in particular, has been helping us with a parser to go from SUO KIF, which SUMO is written in, into the newest version of Common Logic, and we'll be working with him on modularizing that. I have one graduate student, Lydia Sobremunoz, who has been working on understanding the relationships between the process modules within SUMO and ontologies such as the process specification language. So that's one kind of objective there. With respect to Pat Cassidy's foundational ontology, or COSMO, I really see, or as he was calling today, TIPO, I really see one possibility as being sort of axiomatizing some of Pat's concepts from Cosmo, axiomatizing in common logic, and then using the relationships between the modules in Clore to identify the mappings with other upper ontologies so that we can have very concrete applications and concrete understandings of where different upper ontologies are in disagreement and where they are in agreement. And finally, if you move to slide five, the last slide, I just want to outline some of our future plans. In the short term, what we want to do is, I guess before, Clore right now is more of a library than a repository, so at least in the short term, we want to provide scripts that allow people to both submit ontologies and also annotate them. In addition to specifying the different meta-theoretic relations between ontologies, we also want to really ground this rigorously, and so for every particular relationship between ontologies, we want to be able to have automated proofs of that relationship, and if not automated proofs, then at least some other sort of proof by hand, and so we still want to annotate the ontologies with these relationships, but also with proofs of these relationships. Now, eventually, though, what we want to do is have a service-oriented architecture as we have a Bayer portal, and if we can't input the Clore ontologies into Bayer portal because of those back-end restrictions, we at least want to start developing another service-based architecture. And so the short-term, what we're doing is developing use cases, so things like how to upload ontologies, how to download ontologies, how to annotate ontologies, and things like that. And in the longer term, to either begin an iterative development of implementation of these use cases in a long-term migration path to having a repository, or if someone else can come up with a service-oriented architecture, then we would, the longer term would be to integrate the Clore ontologies as well as to integrate these use cases into that whatever architecture will be there. So that about sums it up. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you very much, Michael. That is wonderful. Next, and moving on, let's have Professor John Bateman from Bremen University tell us some of their work, and in particular, some of the tools that they have been developing that might fit into this initiative.
Okay, thank you, Peter. As you see from the title slide, this will be mostly about ontological modularity and how this contributes to the idea of shared and integrated ontologies. On slide 2, you see the overview of what we'll be going through. I'll first be motivating very briefly the approach to modularity that we settled on over the past few years, drawing on the distinct research areas which have been motivating us. And this leads to a particular approach to sharing and integrating ontologies, and I'll finish up with some brief descriptions of work which is currently in progress and how we're taking these things further. On slide 3, you see the first set of concerns that have led us to the position we adopt. We've been working particularly within the Collaborative Research Center on Spatial Cognition in Bremen on space and representing space, language about space, and also cognitive models of space. And this, as you can see here on the right of the diagram, involves very different areas which come together: ontology, geographic information systems, and qualitative spatial reasoning. And putting these together is quite a challenge because of the very different concerns of the different communities. So this firstly leads us to consider modularity and doing justice to the requirements of each of those communities. We go to slide 4. See another area which we're currently involved in. This is a large-scale European Union project here called OASIS, Open Architecture for Accessible Services Integration and Standardization. And this is a large project with around 30 partners in building services for independent living, mobility, smart workplaces, social networks. And in all of these domains, we're delivering or working on services which are meant to combine information again drawing on ontologies, and that's the hyper-ontology in the middle. And again, you see a similarity in concerns in that there are very many different communities and types of knowledge and types of requirements involved. Slide 5 leads us to or information or background state of awareness that this leads us to. There are many projects, many products, many information providers working in all of these areas who are constructing ontologies. But we find many unrelated designs. We find impoverished or in application-specific semantics. We find again and again ontologies being developed ignoring previous work or not being aware of previous work at least. And we have a lack of interoperability, which is precisely what ontologies were meant to provide. So even in the ontology areas, which we see here, we are not getting interoperability. So on slide 6, we consider how we're going to proceed. And proceeding here, we believe that a high degree of interoperability between these systems is going to be necessary, and it is achievable, and it will be achievable by ontological engineering, but we need very special methods to do justice and deal with the diversity of requirements and communities. So our conclusion, based upon all of these distinct areas of work which we have to interact with, areas of different domains and communities, is that there's no sense in which a simple merging of all of the different ontologies which arise in these domains is a very sensible strategy to follow. So on slide 7, we have the basic position that we adopt or accept that there are many perspectives on reality, on the domains that we are representing, and these different perspectives require different ontologies. So our approach to modeling ontologies is ontologically diverse. We accept the need for as many different ontologies that reflect the requirements of applications, domains, and their communities of users. Slide 8 shows that this gets even worse, or even better if one wants to have an approach to ontology which does justice to all of these concerns. So we can break up each of these areas in turn into modules defined in various ways. So our basic starting point or assumption coming out of the experiences that we've made with these attempts to build ontologies that are usable across different domains is that a high degree of modularity and interconnection is very valuable to get the most out of the what ontologies have to offer. On slide 9, we have the approach that we adopt to making this kind of hyper-ontology with lots of connections, mappings between modules effective and achievable. We use particular formal and computational tools. The two primary tools which I'll mention are a language, a specification language, the Common Algebraic Specification Language, CASL, and the heterogeneous tool set, which provides a lot of support and a lot of practical tools for working with these algebraic specifications that we have in CASL. And these have been developed over a good 10 years within the algebraic specification community, and we are now employing these for ontology work. So on slide 10, we have an example in 10, 11, and 12. We have examples of what specifications look like within CASL. I won't go through these in any detail. We can look at the slides at your leisure. But the important thing is that, firstly, it looks like first-order logic in this case, because this one is a first-order logic theory. But probably even more important are the red boxes on the left-hand side. So this shows how we, from the very start, define the ontologies in a modular fashion. We build up ontologies out of individual modules with very well-specified formal relationships between the modules. The examples we have here on these slides are taken from work we did in collaboration with the Laboratory of Applied Ontology in Trento when we were working on a modular specification for Dolce. So on slide 10, you see we have some basic primitives and we have general parthood. And if we go on to slide 11, we see how parthood is extended towards mereology. So we start off with a specification of mereology and extend this with further actions to get us towards mereology. And on slide 12, you see how these start getting put together from the general mereology to particular mereology, parameterized for time, we saw a T on the right-hand side, for space, and also for endurance. So we get reuse of modules in very much the way, or an analogous way, to how John Sower has been describing approach to ontology in terms of lattices of fears. We have here supported through the HEPS tool and the algebraic specification language a usable and already implemented view of the lattice of fears. So on slide 13, this is the final Dolce there, where we see the lattice put together. So we take all the various modules, put them together, and we have Dolce. Slide 14 shows a view from HEPS, which is showing that this lattice of ontologies, of modules, of theories, is a very real notion. We have here a graph showing the various formal relationships between modules, whether there are proof obligations still to be proved, whether the morphisms between modules have been defined, etc. So we have on the one hand an algebraic specification language for writing ontologies, and also on the other hand a practical computational tool for working with these specifications. Slide 15 then gives the overview of the heterogeneous toolset. And the important things there are in the middle, where we see a range of distinct logics which are supported. This leads us in the direction of heterogeneity, why it's called a heterogeneous toolset. It's not for one specific logic, but for any logic which is made known to the system. And we also have structuring mechanisms, which allow any of the logics used within the system to be structured explicitly according to their modularity, and we can define then formal relations between these. Going on to slide 16, you can see this best, not in the PDF, but in the PowerPoint version, so I'll just jump over here. We have developed a rather sophisticated range of relationships between modules, and the best source of further information about that is work by Oliver Kutz and Tilma Fokowski in Bremen. In general, we can relate modules in very flexible ways, which is what we need in order to do justice to a truly modular approach to heterogeneous ontologies. Slide 17 then goes on to the final part where we talk about, I'm going to talk about now the work which we are doing at present, working towards something which is very reminiscent of the aims of the sharing and integrating ontologies. We are working on an extension to BioPortal. We've adopted BioPortal as the as our technological starting point, and we are working with BioPortal within the context of OASIS, our project, in order to have a repository of ontologies for our services, our application domain, rather than the medical ones of BioPortal. We're also working on various Protégé plugins, which are explicitly for manipulating ontologies in this hyper-ontological context, where we focus more on modularity, getting the ontologies down in size, and working more on extending the mapping that one can define between these, and supporting this with appropriate visualization and editing. That's we're very much at the beginning. Slide 18 then gives you the picture of our instantiation of BioPortal, which is called Arate. Currently supports OWL ontologies, just as BioPortal does, of course, limited versioning, only one kind of mapping, and those are exactly the areas which we are now extending upon. Slide 19 shows where we're going with this now. Since we've already added OWL, the description logic flavor of OWL, to the family of logic supported in HEDS, in the heterogeneous toolset, we can combine traditional semantic web-type ontologies written in OWL with the other kinds of ontologies with different kinds of logics, all within single specifications. As soon as we add a logic to HET, the family of logic that HET supports, we can make use of all of the structuring principles for relating modules that are defined by HET and supported by Carter. Now, next steps, we are planning to add common logic as a further node, which is supported by the heterogeneous toolset HETS. And as this applies, as has been done for OWL, as soon as we've done this, then all of the structuring mechanisms which are available will also become available for common logic. Going on to slide 20, which gives a graphical view of what I just said, picking out that central tree of related logics, which is supported by heads. In the middle, we see we've added the owl variants, as I said, and in particular, what we now call het owl or howl, which is heterogeneous owl. You see an example of on the right-hand side, which is written in Manchester syntax, but is just one of the specifications which we can combine with other kinds of specifications written in other logics within the heterogeneous toolset. And on the left-hand side, this is what we're currently working on, is adding common logic also, as they know, into the families of logics which are supported by heads. So this will open up considerably the range of ontologies and the distinct communities of ontologies, ontology developers, who, of course, are working in common logic increasingly, can open up a bridge between the kind of work which we're doing with heads and those groups. So slide 21, the next step. We're going to try and investigate if we can put heads with the addition of common logic and the other kinds of families of logic that it supports behind the scenes in an open ontology repository, which will look fairly like BioPortal, we expect, but as I said, behind the scenes, heads will provide access to other reasoners, move us beyond OWL, and will allow us to use more of the structuring mechanisms and relations between modules that our approach provides. We're also working on semantic versioning and design methodologies for these kind of ontologies, which is equally important. Slide 22, summary of what I've been talking about, replying a strong theoretical foundation, formal specification, as well as practical implementations and tools, which have been developed for heterogeneous specifications in general, we're taking these and applying these to ontology development in particular. This gives us the ability to define formally connected lattices of fully heterogeneous specifications, and the connection with heads and the reasoners which it makes available gives us the ability to support reasoning and semantic interoperability across the distinct kind of worldviews which our various approaches and projects have convinced us is necessary. We're packaging this within already established tools, so for example, adding heads as a backend, connecting with Protojam BioPortal in order to provide a more seamless or transparent access to the reasons. And we're developing methodologies for this kind of development. Slide 22. On slide 23, I'll just skip over, just mention it here as a proposal currently being evaluated by the European Commission for working on the structuring mechanisms of these kind of modules. And as soon as we know more about that, then there'll be a general call for participation if it has been successful. And so I'll just end with thanking all of the other people in Bremen who are working on this area. So that's a summary of where we're coming from and where we're trying to go with heterogeneous molecular ontologies. So thank you. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you very much, John. That's really impressive work and definitely something this SIO initiative will need. Let us call upon John Sower to give us a brief on his work entitled Sharing and Integrating Ontologies, which has been the driving force of getting this whole project together. John.
Okay. I'll now summarize the issues that have been discussed in this series, but what I'll do is begin with some slides that I presented last Tuesday, the March 16th, at NIST. Now, some people here have already were at NIST, and others are new to this material, but I'll just summarize briefly. Now, the title is Sharing and Integrating Ontologies. This is the title of a report that I was writing, and a draft of that is on the web. And it's also the integrating theme that ties these issues together. Now, on slide 2, I summarize some issues about the foundation for interoperability, and I'm not going to go through much detail there because you can read the idea there. I quote a typical documentation from application programs, and you can see that this is highly informal and unstructured, and it can be useful for a programmer who's writing a program, but we need to have much more precise specifications for interoperability. Now, the next slide summarizes the distinction between ontologies, terminologies, and lexical resources. And the idea is that a formal ontology is something that analyzes and formalizes the axioms and definitions about what exists. Terminologies are the informal but very, very useful collections of the terms in any branch of science. And the lexical resource is something like WordNet, or they're like dictionaries, thesauruses, grammars, and other representations of natural languages and their meaning. But these three are related, but they're distinctly different. WordNet, for example, is a valuable lexical resource, but the idea of aligning two different ontologies through WordNet does not guarantee that the definitions in those ontologies are compatible, because WordNet itself has no formalization. It has no formal axioms or definitions that specify those terms, and the fact that one ontology has a category that is similar to a WordNet synset, and another ontology also has a category that's similar to a WordNet synset, cannot guarantee that those two ontologies have precisely the same definitions, equivalent definitions that can support detailed reasoning. Now, the next slide, that's slide number four. On the discussion that I had last week at NIST, I quoted three terms from a book by Otto Ressler on the world as interface. And I don't go into any detail. Ressler went into a lot of discussion about quantum mechanics and observers and issues like that. But I just like three words that he used. Exophysics, which is the discussion of, which are the multiplicity of objective theories about the world as seen through physics and formal ontologies and mereologies and mereotopologies. These are the formal theories about some kind of abstract subject matter. And then you have endophysics, which are the way that each individual person views the world. And again, you can have a multiplicity of exophysics theories that are incompatible with one another. You could have a multiplicity of endophysics views by different people, many of which are also incompatible with one another. But the interface is the phenomena that people and other animals see, feel, interpret, and manipulate. And the point that I was making is, going back to the old statement from Aristotle and his followers, that any theory that's adequate about the world must preserve the phenomena. All theories of physics, formal and informal, and all internal views that people have must agree at that interface, at the level where people and other animals see the world, talk about it, and interpret it, and relate what they see to all of the various formalisms of engineering and science. And the point is that that interface level is a level at which you can have data sharing among incompatible theories. So you might have theories which are very precise and very formal but inconsistent with one another, but to the extent that they are, that they say something true about the world, what they say must be compatible with any other theory that is true about the world. And that is the level at which it is possible to do sharing. That interface level is a level of simple observation statements. And I think that when we're relating incompatible theories, having a discussion at that level can support interoperability. And then in the next slide, slide five, I talk about different methods of reasoning. And one of the points that I make is that theorem proving is only one of many ways of using logic. And that if you look at what people do with relational databases, that there the systems are really doing model checking. It's namely, there's a set of relations, the set of individuals and the relations among them that are stored in a relational database is isomorphic to a Tarski-style model. And the queries that you, the question answering done by an SQL system or the constraint checking that's done at data update time are really verifying that these things are compatible with the model. And for the kinds of relational databases you have and the kinds of queries and constraints stated in first order logic, this kind of verification can be done in polynomial time. And the idea that that first order logic is inefficient is really not true. It's only, it may be true for very detailed theorem proving, but for methods of reasoning with just a relational database, you can get very efficient kind of processing. And in particular, the point that can often happen is that if you use a theorem prover to check consistency, the checking can take exponential time or even be undecidable. However, any theory that has at least one model is guaranteed to be consistent. Now, finding a model can be just as time-consuming as proving a theorem, but if you already have a model to begin with, you could just check that model against the theory in polynomial time. And the example for that is, you look at the kinds of models that people develop for ontologies and theories of physics and theories of engineering. The people who are designing their system already have a model in mind. They already have some external physical system that they're working with, and a description of that system constitutes a formal model of the axioms that they state about the system. And you can, if you don't have any other formal kind of tools, you can just take MySQL or any relational database, translate your axioms, first-order axioms, into an SQL query, and translate all the information you know about that model into a set of tables in your relational database, and in polynomial time, you can verify that, check each axiom against your model and check to see whether they're true. Now, of course, if you're dealing with an infinite model, you might have some problems, but there's a lot more qualifications to be mentioned here. But the point is that this is an alternate method for consistency checking that we ought to consider, namely just verifying whether your axioms are true of a given model. And that is something that I think has not been sufficiently well explored in the database, in the ontology community, and I believe that's something we should explore. Slide 7 has a just a couple of diagrams to stick with the lattice tree and an irregular partial ordering. And I have a couple of slides that mention formal concept analysis, and which is one widely used point. By the way, I wanted to mention on slide 8, a lot of people who use OWL are also using formal concept analysis to ensure that their OWL systems are consistent. And if you just take if you go to Google and you just type OWL for OWL and FCA for formal concept analysis, and you'll find a lot of papers that have published where people are using the FCA method for generating lattices in conjunction with OWL, and this is something that is another tool that might be added to the tool set that the for those people in Germany, by the way, the FCA methods were originally developed in Germany, and there's still a hotbed of users there of using FCA methods, so that might be a good place to get experts to work with on FCA. And then here's the slide 9. It has my diagram, very little excerpt from the lattice of theories. And the point that I make is that the axioms for theory revision are stated in terms of the basic operators of contraction, expansion, and revision, where on the left side of that slide, in the picture in the slide 9. On the left side, it shows a little excerpt from the lattice with four theories, A, B, C, D, where B is a generalization, a common generalization of A and C, and B is a common specialization. And the operation of contraction deletes axioms from a theory, and every time you delete an axiom, you get to a more general theory that is less detailed, more underspecified, and more general. Whenever you add axioms to a theory, you get the operation of expansion, which takes you to a more specialized theory. And so if you go from A to C, that's a revision step that goes from across the lattice to sibling nodes, and that can be done in two steps by a contraction followed by an expansion. And another important operator in the lattice that's not usually discussed so much in the theory revision talk is the idea of taking any theory and just relabeling the labels on your relations, on the names of your entities and your relations. And if you take any consistent theory and you replace any of the names with names that are not present, not already used in that theory, you are guaranteed to have a theory which is just as consistent as the other one. So if you have a consistent theory in any system of logic, and you do a systematic relabeling of your names and the names of your individuals and the names of your relations among the individuals and your functions of the among the individuals, what you have is another theory that is exactly isomorphic to the original. And in the Colore system, one of the examples, one of the things that the Colore, that Michael was discussing, is the idea of taking an abstract mathematical theory, such as a partial ordering, and then applying that theory to some specialized ontology. And that action I call relabeling, because you take an abstract mathematical theory in which you have an abstract nodes, abstract relations on those nodes, and then you relabel those relations with the labels that are used in your ontology. And if your original theory is consistent, you will, the act of relabeling would be consistent, and then you have have to do a second check to make sure that the partial ordering axioms are consistent with the axioms of the subject you're mapping it to. So those are the kinds of operations that you can do on lattices, and these are closely related to the work that's been done with Colore, and I'm sure that these are the kinds of things that could be related to the work that John Brayman has done. And then as examples of multiple incompatible theories, I mentioned the examples of a three-dimensional ontology and a four-dimensional ontology, and these are related to some of the recent discussions that were taking place in the Ontolog forum, so I won't go into much detail here, but the idea is that you might have two ontologies which are stated in incompatible terms. One might be in a four-dimensional ontology and the other is in a three-dimensional version. On the other hand, at the level of the observable statement relating those ontologies to the world, it is possible to state them in a very much underspecified ontology, which could be related to the more specialized ones for a 3D version or a 4D version. Now, there's a lot of hand-waving in between. You have to be careful to make sure that when you specialize them, that you have done the specialization in a way that's compatible with everything. But the point is that it's kind of a framework where you talk about generalizations and specializations among ontologies gives you a way of talking about that interface level between the exophysics and the endophysics. The exophysics gives you those formally defined scientific theories of physics and myriad topology and other kinds of highly abstract methods. And those methods must be compatible at the interface, that is, all of the phenomena that are observable, which relate them to the endophysics, namely with the models that people have in their heads, and about which they talk about in ordinary language. And I believe that bringing those ideas together with the ideas of the formal mappings among the theories in your lattice or your heterogeneous on logics and so on, I think all that is possible, and we can have a formal foundation of that. And that's what I say briefly in section slide at number 11, that these various kinds of things can be reconciled. And then the term that I was using for the ontologies that go into your system, instead of talking about the lattice, any set of theories that go into the repository will never be infinite, and they will not have all possible relations that that may be implicit there. It's not clear that we'll have every last one of them discovered and stated formally. But instead, what we will have, what I'm calling a hierarchy of certified theories. And I'm using the term hierarchy for that subset of the lattice that might not have all of the formal relations defined. The hierarchy is a subset of the lattice. It contains those theories that have been formally defined and certified to be consistent and certified that they have been used successfully in at least one application, so that we have theories that are actually have been proven to be useful and tested. And the term that I suggest there is to call it the hierarchy. The thing to talk about the lattice is this abstract formalism that has infinitely many theories in it, whereas the hierarchy is just a finite subset of the ones we actually have stored in our repository and the ones that we have certified to be consistent and useful and so on. So that basically covers the issues that I was concerned with and that I covered last Tuesday in my talk at SNF. And the final slide mentioned some related reasoning, and I'm readings, and I'm going to extend them further when I put up another version of that report on my website. So, does anybody have any further comments, discussions, anything further they'd like to discuss?
John, Mike Dean is online now. Let's find out if Nicola is online as well. Nicola? No. Shall we pass the floor to Mike before coming back to, since we only have like 4 minutes left in the call. Is that okay?
Hi, Peter. That's fine with me. I think I was off to take a few moments here. I've actually been on for the last hour or so. Sorry, I should have joined earlier. I'm one of the co-conveners of LOR along with Peter and Lear Olbers. And I don't have slides, but I'll post my comments to chat board after I'm done here. So first off, I'd like to echo the comments that Peter made in his slides about the value of the FIO effort and of also really building more bridges between a number of related communities that have been working in this area. Those of us involved in OR, and there's a number of us that on the telecom today, are certainly pleased to support the FIO effort. And in particular, in addition to the benefits from the content, we view this as a good opportunity to connect with users and developers to get a lot. So we look forward to further collaboration. That's all I have at this point.
Thanks, Mike. Back to John. John Solo.
Well, that's pretty much what I had to say. So I think we can turn the back to you about discussing the plan for the future of how we might proceed.
Yes, I have a couple of proposals. I mean, and consistent with the process at Ontolog, usually we start a project or start a sub-community with a charter. So at least so everyone is focused and there's no ambiguity as to what that sub-community or what that project is supposed to be. Although it's quite clear after all the today's presentation, after the March 16th meeting and today's meeting, it's quite clear what this SIO project is supposed to be. I still hope we can draw up a maybe one line or one short paragraph charter. That's number one. Number two, I have a couple of suggestions on maybe starting a new mailing list, particularly for this work. I can think of at least two, one called SIO Forum and one called SIO Def. The forum would probably discuss the overall implementation and so on. The Def will maybe delve more into the platform side of things. I mean, preparing the technologies to support the content. But this is a proposal we could discuss about that. And since John has led us in this effort, so I will defer to John to make the call. Also, I saw that Kevin Keck on the chat board had made a suggestion with reference to the title of the project. He seems to think that calling it Sharing and Integrating Ontologies may be better than Shared and Integrated Ontologies. So again, I mean, that I would sort of defer to John Sower to make that call.
Oh, I think that's fine. In fact, I think I used the term sharing and integrating myself. So
yeah, well, you used that on your paper.
If you feel that sharing and integrating is your preference too, I could change all documentation to that as well.
Yeah, I think so, because we actually are talking about, because the present tense is better, because we want to talk about the procedure for doing this, and if we talk about shared and integrated, there really aren't that many that have been shared and integrated so far, so we don't have as many as we would like to have, so let's focus on the future of sharing and integrating.
Okay, do you have a mission statement to that you want to throw out, or would you rather do this when we have the new mailing list and put that as sort of the first agenda on that mailing list?
Right, I think maybe we should put that on the agenda, because what I am doing in those slides is presenting, or in that report, is bringing together a lot of this work, and also I think the slides that various people have presented today have a lot of good phrases there, and a good idea would be for anybody to go through there, comb out some interesting phrases and put them together in a statement, and we can do that on an email list.
All right. So do you prefer the two mailing lists, SIO Forum and SIO Def? I mean, there's another alternative is to leave the discussion that SIO Forum is supposed to have on Ontolog Forum and just do an SIO Def, I mean, to work on the more intricate details and technical details of getting the platform ready to support that work. So, I mean, this is and has been the main conversation that Ontolog Forum has always been aspired to support anyway. So I'm open to either one.
Well, actually, I think Ontolog Forum is where people were most interested in this, and a lot of people on Ontolog Forum have said that so far they have heard all this very abstract and theoretical and tangential kind of remarks. They would much rather hear about actual work that people are doing that's applicable, and I think that some of the things we've been discussing today are very definitely applicable, and that might be the central focus. Let's make that the central focus.
So does that mean we don't do a SIO forum? The SIO forum type discussion will stay on Ontolog forum, but we start an SIO dev development to take care of the next level of, next granular level of discussion that maybe not everyone on Ontolog forum maybe aspire to track.
Yeah, I think that would be a good way to go because there are a lot of issues that people have quick opinions about, but the forum could get into the ones where you have really nitty-gritty detailed issues of how do you connect text to Calore or something like that, where there's only a small subset of the people really interested in what those details are and or able to contribute any concrete statement about them. So that would be more appropriate for the smaller group, whereas the issues of what does it mean to combine ontologies and relate them together with databases and UML and formalisms of various kinds, I think that is something that the Ontolog Forum would do very well.
Fantastic. So shall we defer to you to start a thread on the SIO project charter, and then you start the thread, and discussion can go on?
I'll send a note to Ontolog Forum saying, with that title, Sharing and Integrating Ontology. Summarize what we just discussed in today's thing, point to that web page there, and also mention the previous discussion and say that this is an ongoing thing that seems to be looking pretty good, so let's consider it.
Yep. Sounds great. So last chance for questions. Anyone has any, please put your hand up. By the way, I apologize for all the mishaps today. We got the time wrong. We got the recording botched as well. So it looks like I was only able to capture the last maybe 20 or 30 minutes of the recording. So I apologize to all the earlier presenters. I am open to any people want to remake the recording of the presentation. Please contact me offline, and we could sort of re-record and edit that in. Otherwise, at least the immediate rendering of the recording will be only for the last maybe 20 or 30 minutes. If any more issues we need to address before we defer to the mailing list on Ontolog Forum and Ontolog Dev and SIO Dev. If not, then I will create the SIO Dev list, and I assume everyone who had responded to today's session, I will automatically subscribe you. So if you had responded and you do not want to be on the SIO Dev list, please send me a note. Similarly, if you responded and participated today, and if you are not already on Ontolog Forum, I will subscribe you to Ontolog Forum as well. Okay, and thank you very much. And thank you, John. Thank you, Matthew, Pat Cassidy, Michael Gruniver, John Bateman, Mike Dean, and thanks again, John, for the leadership. Great. That's it. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay. Thanks, Peter.
Bye-bye.